Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Tuesday, the 14th of June. It'll be afternoon by the time you get it, because this is just before 12. So by the time I've finished it, got it up, recorded, posted, it'll be good afternoon. I need my little child star doing the intros. Right, where do we start? Lots of things today. It's a dark old day for the UK again with the old Rwanda situation. Just incredible, really. I find it incredible what we're doing. I find it incredible reading the comments of people to it. I find it incredible that we've got a fucking foreign secretary who, I mean, I come out of Alicia Keys last night and Andy Richman had posted Taoiseach Island. I thought, what the fucking hell was that all about? And then obviously you examine the news further and Liz Truss, the Irish Taoiseach. I mean, it's like we have gone back to the sort of fucking Athenian days of sortition where we put all the fucking idiots in a poll and drew our leaders out. It really is. It's fucking dark day. Really is. Just a small, tiny amount of reading on the issue of this, can educate the fucking racists and the fucking idiots who don't understand it. But it's legal. Just because something's legal doesn't mean it's right. Fucking slavery was legal. Women not voting was legal. Doesn't mean it's not fucking right, does it? We are just operating under an incompetent government, appealing to a fucking minority, and that's what they got voted in by. It was a fucking minority, whatever way you look at it. Just our voting system's up the arse, and it's just horrendous. It really is what we're doing. Anyway, I can get lower and lower. They're like kids in a playground, this lot now, aren't they? They're like the people who think they're the cool kids in the playground, and ooh, we're hard, look how hard we are. You're hard, pretty, you're fucking hard, look at you. Absolutely fucking horrific. Just read little bits around it. It can all be so fucking easily disproven, all the shit they're talking about going to stop trafficking and things. It just isn't. It is so easily disproven. And why don't they stop in France? Again, easily fucking nullified. France, Germany take far more asylum seekers than we do. Far, far more. It's just a nonsense. Anyway, on we go. Alicia Keys last night. Brilliant. Absolutely superb. She's somebody I've always wanted to see. Booked that in 2019, so it was nice to finally get there and have it go ahead after numerous cancellations for COVID. Brilliant. I recommend it to anybody. If anybody gets the chance to see Alicia, just amazing vocals, thoroughly enjoys what she's doing. Smiling, cracking songs, which brings me to, talking of idiots, this is where, genuinely we should have some form of fucking test to let people vote. I haven't dug him out for a while, but I obviously said on whatever day I did a podcast, going to see Alicia Keys, Suggsy in our WhatsApp group, I wouldn't know a single song that Alicia Keys has done. I mean, fuck off. I did just put old fuck off. She's been around since the late 90s, early 2000, 8 albums, 8 concert tours, about 100 TV appearances, presented the Grammys twice, 65 million records sold. Words absolutely fail me. And I've never moved on really from the 70s and 80s. Yes, in fucking everything. And that's exactly what I told him. In everything. Fucking unbelievable. Honestly. I don't know a single Alicia Keys song. Do me a favour. What are we dealing with? I'm going to do the US Open today because I didn't do a podcast yesterday. My fucking laptop broke down yesterday. So I was in the Apple Genius store just went to turn it on Sunday, nothing happened. But the top screen has gone apparently, so that's nice. So I had to go in there and then leave that to be repaired. So that took my time yesterday. So I am, I've been staring at Excel. I've been looking at Excel for, it's just nice. I've got 2 days where I haven't got to look at Excel, tomorrow and Thursday. But I have recorded the Mindset Pod. I will post that tomorrow because otherwise that would make this one too long. I'm going to do the US Open today because people can, if they want to get a bet down on that, they can do, if they bear anything to what I say. As always, I'll post my bets on Friday. Post the Mindset one tomorrow before I go out, and then there won't be anything until Friday, Saturday. So, yes, I'm playing golf with the boys on Thursday afternoon, which will be good fun. Looking forward to it. I mean, obviously, we've got Royal Ascot. So, I mean, most people know we haven't gone ahead with the Ascot race card. It didn't seem to generate any interest for numerous reasons. I think people don't know how to bet it, which is fair enough. Doesn't fit into people's plans, and obviously the time with it being 5 days and a working week. But we live and learn with stuff like that. We just won't do it. Simple as that. And we'll look to perhaps help a smaller group of people who, want to do this, want to move it on properly. It just helps us channel our time. I didn't want Andy doing a load of work for next to nothing, which it would have been absolute next to nothing, and he does put a lot of work into it. He's absolute attention to detail, so I certainly wasn't going to go down that road and put him through that. So it is Ascot. I'll have a quick run through. 2:30 at Ascot, and I will say actually Andy has sent me some notes, but Andy, if you're listening to this first, I haven't had time this morning to look at yours, so if you're looking at, if what I say here you look at and go, I must be mad, I will give your notes and things a read when I've finished and got this up, and then I'll see if there's any trades that I might want to do. But this is just stuff I've been through this morning and notes I've been sent from other people, text messages and things. So the 2:30 at Ascot by Ede, it's 1.17 and should win accordingly. I hate the phrase buying money, but if you were looking to buy money at racing, that looks like one that could potentially do it. The 3:05, Aidan O'Brien runs Blackbeard. He's won this race a lot. Obviously strongly fancied, but I am going to stick with the favourite Persian Force. I've been told I know nothing about the draw. This is where using people like Andy and their experience comes in. He's got a high draw that he'll be able to track the pace, and the exact words, cruise up and clear away, looks potentially top class. So Persian Force in the 3:05 Ascot. All this is at your own peril, of course. 3:40 is a 18 runner sprint. I think it's one of those, it's locked, you've got a 3.4 favourite, 4.2, and then 11 bar, and a lots of sort of price, 30, 40, 46. You'll have lots of people trying to find value at the big prices. But the Americans have Golden Pal over, that's the one I like. Golden Pal in the 3:40 at Ascot. Get an easy lead, and Irad Ortiz Jr. will shit in on Golden Pal. There you go. 4:20 at Ascot. It looks to be between the two top two, Caribus and My Prospero. Caribus 1.84 with Buick on board. My Prospero 6.2 next with Tom Marcond. Situations like that, I have to go with the bigger price. I can't see that much between the two of them. Caribus is a top horse, but My Prospero also looks decent. Looked impressive last time out. Prospero tentative. Perhaps back at Win and Place. I think you probably, place money hopefully is a run for nothing. One I've been given at a price is Kieran Fallon's Mount Maljume at 16, who I'm told is progressive and could be top class. That's the 4:20, 5:00. Again, 20 runners. easy to get drawn back down the field. I've been told that Bring On The Night, Ryan Moore on the favourite, Bring On The Night is the one to throw your money at. So Bring On The Night is where I shall be. I also have had a small mention for Rishoon, Richard Kingscoe's mount. The 535, Juan El Cano, Andreazzini's mount at 9, Juan El Cano. And also being told, and I can't find it, Tasman Bay, James McDonald, Tasman Bay currently 16. So Juan El Cano, Andreazzini's at 9, and Tasman Bay, James McDonald on board at 16. And then the last race is the 6:10. And Cleveland won at Chester. And obviously has a chance, but I have been told to look for the second in the betting, Juan de Montalban. This is one I've had a word for. Juan de Montalban, look progressive. Fancy to run a big race. As I say, that is stuff I've looked at, stuff I've been sent, nothing to do with anything else. Andy, I appreciate you sending me that, just haven't had time. So take all that with as much heed as you wish. And if you do get involved in any of those, at your own peril. But it looks a cracking day racing, looks really good, you know, one of the best days racing of the year, I think, the first day at Ascot. So fill your boots, enjoy yourselves, have a lovely time. Right, let's move on to a topic I know a bit more about, and that is golf. So we have the US Open, the third major of the year, at Brookline Country Club. It was last played here when I was sort of actively playing golf back in 1988, and Curtis Strange, who was a golfer I massively admired, and an arrow straight driver of the ball. I actually bought the same putter. He used a Ping Xing 2 putter. I used the same putter. I mimicked his swing a little bit. He tended to sway a little bit to the right to get behind the ball. And that's how I sort of developed my game. And he beat another of my all-time faves of that era, who was Faldo in an 18-hole playoff. It was a fantastic tournament too. Two of the world's best going at it. Absolutely superb. It's also held the Ryder Cup in 99, which was where the US misbehaved themselves, I believe, when Justin Leonard rolled that long putt in on whatever it was, 17, was it? When they all ran on the green. I think that was Brookline. Was Mark James captain? Can't remember, something like that. But it was, that was there, I'm certain. They've made some alterations to the course, obviously, since then. They did have the US Amateur in 2013, employed as the sort of go-to guy for course renovation and alteration, Gil Hance, and he's increased the green sizes to get them back to the sort of early 20th century, the Francis Ouimet days, with contours and roll-offs, and his view that larger greens, you know, are not a bad thing because they allow for better, more perilous pin placements. And they're still not the largest of greens. I think only Pebble on the US Open roster is smaller average green sizes. But these now, you know, good greens, steep fall-offs, and deep, tough, rough. Guido Migliozzi, who had a top 10 in the US Open, posted a picture at the weekend just dropping a ball in the rough and it disappeared from sight completely. And for me personally, that's the golf I like to see. I like to see these guys, if they miss shots, miss greens, miss fairways, they've got a bit of battle ahead of them. So we have a 7,200 yard par 70. Rough is a mix of several grasses, perennial rye, which I've played out of, and it is beastly, it's horrific, Kentucky blue, which I've been playing for the last few weeks, and then these green surrounds and first cuts of sort of 3 to 5 inch Poa Anoa. Greens are around 4,300 square feet, so they are still on the smaller side, well protected by really good bunkering here. A lot of the holes need aerial approaches. You can't sort of run it in the front. And the greens this week are 75% Poa Anoa and 25% bent grass. So that's a shift away from the pure 100% bent grass they've been playing for the last few weeks. And as an example, Rory is very, very good on bent grass, as he's shown the last few weeks. Not so good on the mix. So it does make a difference because of the grain and the speeds that you get. It's just going to be great. It is going to be absolutely great. Oh, and we can expect 20 plus mile an hour winds by the weather forecast all 4 days. Good luck, guys. So whilst everyone is singing and dancing in April about azaleas and wide, you know, painted green fairways and tees, this week we will see proper skill, grit, struggles, and a proper golfing test of all elements of the game. Yes, I will go as far as say it, this is better than the April Club Championships. There you go, if you know anything about anything. Last week, good trading tourney for us on FTS. Saw McIlroy retain the Canadian Open. So whilst people were watching, you know, and we're going to have all the news again with these players turning up. I think they've already done some press conferences at Brookline, and Mickelson and that have been questioned. So while people were watching the Beheaders sponsored event on YouTube with no cut, Andy Ogletree winning, and I say that in the loosest possible turn of the phrase. He was 48th of the 48th in the Beheaders tournament, and he shot, picked up 120 grand for shooting plus 24 for 54 holes. Yeah, so he averaged 8 over par around. And an average, and was paid basically £40,000 per round. It is just exhibition bollocks. Poulter plus 5. Westwood, who suddenly loves the concept of 54 holes of golf, has never ever raised it once in his life, but loves it now. He was plus 8. Perhaps 72 holes was too much for Lee on that score. Make him another round, he'd have been double digits over par. And Philly Mick, who many are holding up as the face of this, apparently paid $160 million to turn up and shoot plus 10 for 54 holes. I will keep repeating 54 holes, and I'm not being funny, this is my sort of level of golf. If they want to give me a few quid, go on then. Absolute nonsense. Whereas on the PGA Tour, it was a cracking Sunday night. McIlroy, Thomas Finau going head to head. Rose on for a 59, shot 60 with 3 bogeys in the round. McIlroy almost flawless, 62, bit of a wobble around 15-16, but a fantastic shot into 17 sealed it, and no disgrace. You know, I think McIlroy shot 62, Rory, Thomas and Finau shot 64s. It was just superb, and it was competition, and that's what this other thing for me just lacks is, you know, you will go on about it because it's news, but the picture somebody posted of Westwood when the Super League in football was announced, and one of the big issues with the Super League was you wouldn't have competition, and Westwood posted a picture of a bloke doing the sort of angel thing in a load of money, you know, the snow angels when they lie in the snow. He posted a gif of a bloke doing it in dollar bills, Super League, you know, mimicking it, and he basically has done exactly the same thing. It's pathetic. But yeah, fair play to Rory. I didn't think he'd win it, but he played superb, to be fair. And when they all there, well, you know, when I think when they all play their best, Thomas and Rory are probably ahead of the pack. And fair play for Big Tony, who I'd given a sort of big up in the preview the week before, and then backed on the Friday, for hanging in there and ultimately coming second. Just, you know, Rory was just too good on the day. But back to Brookline, and one of the key stats of US Opens. US Opens, for those who don't watch it, golf tend to be, and they drifted away from it, and I really think they'll get back to it this year, have always been sort of courses where they try and get a winning score around level par, narrow fairways, thick rough, so that if you miss fairways, miss greens, you are penalised, and don't just have a lovely lie and can get it up and down. And I think we've gone back to that this week, certainly looking at the picture that they posted of the rough. I think that's what we're going to see. Off the tee, strokes gained off the tee is a key stat. Of the last 10 winners, the average ranking is just over 15 going into the event. And two of those were Koepka, won it back-to-back. And when he won it, he was outside the top 30. So if you took him out, the eight of the last 10 winners have been ranked inside the top 10 going into the week for shots gained off the tee. And that will put the likes of Rory and John Rahm right in the mix here, who are sort of up there in first and third. Zalatoris fifth. Distance won't be, you know, you want distance and accuracy. It won't be as strong a feature. Obviously, DeChambeau, when he won the US Open at Torrey Pines, he adopted the smack it, but the rough wasn't as penal as it is here. You will want to get the ball in play, but if you can get it down there and you're going into the greens with shorter clubs, it makes the game a little bit easier. Greens in reg will be a massive feature. As missing these, you know, the rough will then come into play around the greens, and that's when you'll need somebody who's also good at scrambling. Everybody's going to miss greens. They're all going to miss 25-30% of the greens. And a bit like us in punting, it's going to be a week where you're going to need a lot of patience and discipline, sticking to a game plan, not chasing, taking your medicine, you know, like we do when we take a red. The course will frustrate some, and the winner will be one who not only plays well but keeps a cool head. So in this we have, after his win last week, McIlroy at 12 tops the betting. I did say he may win, he's capable of winning, but I didn't want to back him at a short price last week, and I don't want to back him again this week at a short price at 12. If he does win back-to-back, fair play. Personally, I don't think he will. He got away with a couple of loose ones last week, and his wedge game, he did it a great shot into 17, but through the week was lacking. Just, you know, you watch people like Thomas play and they hit a wedge, it's 8-10 feet. McIlroy's proximity is 25-30 feet. You know, this week every single aspect of your game will need to be dialed in. Of course, he's a very good player for the risk of sounding sort of monotonous every week. Third in shots gains off the tee, third in distance, but he is 57th in greens in reg. He's outside the top 30 in scrambling, putting and bogey avoidance. So all three of those, you know, there's chinks there. He could make me look daft. You know, there will be an overreaction to him winning last week. But for me, I don't think he will make me look daft, and he's easily avoided at the price. Thomas is 14.5. His game, you know, the win at the USPGA, his game seems to be right back at the top. I was saying earlier in the year that one part of the game always seemed to let him down. You know, he drove it well, but his irons poorly, or that his putting was really poor for a long period. He played really well last week. Rory just did better over the four rounds. Thomas is 14th shots gained off the tee, 13th in distance, 14th greens in regulation, 6th shots gained approach, 6th in scrambling, and he's down at 40th in putting. But his putting was, you know, he was down near the hundreds. That was the putter he had the real issue with before, and he changed the hosel, changed the neck setup of his putter, and his figures are improving every week. He is first in bogey avoidance. He's second in par four efficiency. On par fours, 450 to 500 yards, which there's seven this week, you know, almost half the course. I would think that JT will almost certainly be up there, you know, load of confidence from winning that USPGA. He's got one of the best caddies with him, one of the most experienced caddies, Bones. And at 2 points more, he appeals more for me than Rory does. You know, I think the you know, if somebody said to me, back one of those two, I certainly wouldn't put you off backing Thomas this week. I'm sure he will be up there. You know, I'm loath to say, because I said it was Smith last week and then I got stick for it, that he's your sort of 50-30 trader, I guess, would be Thomas. Be surprised if he's not up there. Scheffler, same old, only 18th last week, which you look at it and goes disappointing. I'm sure you're going to give you a run for the money. You know, obviously, I think the blowout at the PGA, you know, such high hopes after winning the Masters going in there, didn't make the cut. This course setup being vastly harder than most weeks, I just don't think he'll win this as good as he's been playing. I'm happy to pass him up. You know, again, as I always say, any of these guys can win, but he's not for me this week, given how the course sets up. John Rahm, I mean, obviously with McIlroy doing well, Thomas doing well, somebody has to drift, and Rahm's gone out to 17. Has to come into the equation at this price. when Curtis Strange won here. He did so as champion in 87, and then come and won here in 88. Rahm comes in as champion, and is looking to become one of the very few defend the title, I think, since Strange. I'm not sure that Woods did it. Cook has certainly defended. And Rahm could be fancied to do the same. The golf side, I've absolutely no issue with. He is number one in the key metric for me, shots gained off the tee, fifth in distance, first in greens in regulation, 22nd in approach. Tidy, you know, he's a fantastic golfer, tidy player, but he is down at 140th in scrambling, 76 in putting, seen his putting woes. They're big numbers to overcome this week, and it is the scrambling number that niggles at me. This guy can be a bit of a hothead, and he will need to stay calm, a bit like us, as I say, when we have to take a Reading gambling. He's going to have to accept his punishment when he misses some of these greens, doesn't get up and down and move on to the next. I'll be surprised if he's not up there, I'll be honest, but that number does bother me. But it's a decent price for 17, without a doubt. You know, he could make that price look silly, coming in as defending champ. Smith, 25. I said last week the closing 77 the previous week was probably his worst round for 2 years, and then he opens up last week with a 76. And I watched some of it, and the commentator said it looks like someone else had taken over his body. I mean, I don't know what happened there, the 77 the week and then the 76 to open. He then bounced back with 65, 68, 71. Great fight to make the cut. I think a lot of players would have just given up after shooting 77 and thought, I can take the weekend off and go and do some US Open prep. Obviously, those rounds have seen his price drift a little bit. And for me, it's the shots gained off the tee. He's down in 143rd. He's given up six shots to the field so far in all his tournaments this year, off the tee. And just shows you how good he is with other elements of his game. But I just don't think you can have that form of driving performance around a US Open track, particularly one like Brookline. So I would, you know, he's one I'd need to see after round one. You know, again, you can't write them off, but I'd be really surprised if this is Smith's week. Shuffle, repeat the last X weeks, play the tape, Ian, cannot get involved until I see him win, pretty stylish, blah 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 blah, next please. Cantlay, 27. As I've said a few times, the guy's form had fallen off a cliff compared to the winter period. Well, he just looked superb, but he bounced back with a third at Memorial, where he was defending, posted solid numbers there, and I like when I see a player improve. As I said with Finau last week, it's a good sign. 18th shots gained off the tee, 69th in greens in regulation, which was letting him down his iron play, but it was vastly improved at Memorial last time. He's 15th scrambling. I've just got a sneaky feeling that Patrick may be involved this week. His game is trending better, bar the USPGA, which was just an abomination. I don't know what happened there. But if you put a line through that, he was second at the Heritage, won the Pairs tournament, third at Memorial. And of the top 10, you know, of the ones we've covered first, probably him, Rahm and Thomas would be the ones that I would want on side. Certainly interesting to see how he starts, but I think 27 is a decent price about this guy. I could see him being up there this week. He's certainly got the mentality for it as well. Spieth next, 32, sorry. Seventh in scrambling, which basically tells you all you need to know about this lad. His all-round game has improved. His putting has been horrendous, which I keep saying. You go back to when he was winning the Open, US Open, Masters. He just putt people off the boards. He's down at 153rd. I mean, it's amazing the results he's showing. He's had a win, seconds, thirds, battling what is just a horrendous flat stick. He's always a trader for me. He fights for every shot. If he remarkably finds his putter, he'll be in the mix. He knows what it takes to win. He won't give up. You know, great scrambling numbers, so he's never out of a hole. He is one where, you know, you miss it right and you think, well, that's dead, but he gets it up and down. So again, at 32, he's one I want on the radar. Keep an eye on, and he is a great trader because people overreact to his movements. So definitely one to keep an eye on this week. Matt Fitzpatrick, he was 36 last week when I said I didn't want to back him last week, you know, and I said cue the win, and he went off and led after round one. He was 36th for the US Open then, as at price. He's now into 32. I mean, he showed great promise last week. He basically had the tournament by the scruff of the neck going into the last six holes of the second round. Had the opportunity to finish the round 4, 5, 6 clear. And then finished double, birdie, bogey, 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 to end that second round. Basically gave the tournament to others, and ended up shooting a final round 67, which wasn't mind-blowing given the numbers that were being shot that day, to finish in a tie for 10th. I think if you'd backed him each way pre-event last week, you'd have been going off your head at how you didn't get paid out. And you know, a lot of this does come down if you know the game. This guy can win. He won the US Amateur here in 2013, so he's going to have fond memories of the course, but it has changed a bit since then. He's, just for me, and again I say, knowing the game, he is making mental errors every time he is in contention of winning. And I fancied him more for this last week than I do now, seeing what I can only call as a bit of a flop when in the hunt again last week, you know, following on from the same that happened in the PGA. I watch him and I see him physically trying to hit the ball too hard, asking himself, it's almost like an error, you know, that amateurs make, that they, if they've got 150 yards, they go, I hit a 7-iron 150 yards. Yeah, but they've got to hit it perfectly. They'd be better hitting a 6-iron. And if they play for a bit of a miss hit, because they don't actually hit that many shots out the middle, he's asking himself all the time to hit the shots at the maximum. So rather than hitting an easy 7, he's trying to force an 8, and he's got to get it spot on at its absolute best. It was really interesting listening to Scotty Scheffler did an interview last week, and he was asked what's led to his improvement. And he said, I've just learned to hit a lot of new shots and now I trust them on the golf course. He said, and I'm hitting more clubs, hitting it 60-70%. And he called it chippy irons. He said, I'm hitting a lot of chippy iron shots in. Fitz is trying to hit the perfect shot and strike it perfectly. I don't think his caddy's doing the job well enough for him. And I couldn't, on basis of what I've seen the last few weeks, I couldn't now back him pre-event. He could well trade, as this is his sort of course. You know, as I say, he has won the US Amateur here. He does hit fairways, so he will hit fairways. He nudges it round, and he's good at scrambling. He's fourth in shots gained scrambling. So he's definitely one that I will be having an eye on for trading. But I personally couldn't back him pre-event with a, you know, top eight at the prices. I'm just seeing enough from him that I think somebody needs to get hold of him and get him to play a slightly different game when he's in contention. He's just making, and I don't call him golfing it, he's just making mental errors, choosing the wrong shot, hitting the wrong club, all of which could be rectified. And I just think that, I mean, his caddy's been around for years, he's a top lad, but he just looks like he's on his flipping holidays for me at the minute. He just seems to be just walk around and take the cash. I don't see him having an input and getting hold of him and saying, hold on a minute, in these moments. And that's where I think Thomas with Bones, you've seen an improvement. Finally, we've got Sam Burns completes the top 10 at 32 also, same price as Fitz. I know which one I'd want to be on, the guy who's won 3-4 times this year. Good player, tied fourth again last week, another good account. I said last week, if he's on a streak, ride him. The worrying stat for me again is shots gained off the tee, 64th. Talked about the strength of that stat going into these. But if he's up there after day one, get him in your trading pack as the next step for this boy as a major. He's not scared to win. 4 really good rounds last week. And I can't help but feel when I look at it now, if he was called Rory, Justin, John or Jordan, he'd be half the price that he is. So that's he's just a really, really good player, this lad, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him win a major. But yeah, the driving is the one aspect that worries me a little bit this week. So we'll see how he goes. So that's the top 10 in the betting. You then have your usual suspects after that. Zalatoris, 36. Another on the radar, another yet to win. And if you take away the fact of a putter, which is like a crankshaft, you know, he's been top five now in several majors, up there in all the stats, good ball striker, shots gained off the tee, sixth, greens in regulation, sixth, looks a good competitor. It's the putter, and you just, I mean, it just looks like it goes off in his hand. So he's one for me to see how he starts and trade. I've got a feeling he'll be up there again, up around the top 10. You know, he's one I couldn't say to you, don't put a few quid on now, and, you know, you'd probably be in a no risk, get your money out. And if he goes well, trade him. But yeah, it is the blade. Shane Lowry, again, another good week last week, but never really threatened. Second in scrambling, outside the top 40, shots gained off the tee. I did say, you know, I think his game might be trending the other way here. Not a prolific winner, tends to find a disappointing shot or hole at the wrong time. He's becoming a bit of a sort of reliable plodder, I guess. So just one I'd like to see how he starts. Morikawa, 38. Not for me, just not playing well enough. You know, they're cue to win now, but I just don't think he's playing well enough, Morikawa, so I couldn't get involved at 38. And Tony Finau is 40. Gave us a great run for the money last week as a second to McIlroy. I think he's one to have on side, another one a bit like Burns. When he's playing well, he's streaky and he's playing well. You know, no shame last week shooting 64 in the final round to lose and come second. Playing well. His putting is getting better every week. That was the thing I said to look for last week. Putted well last week, in parts. There's still a couple that you felt could have knocked him in, but it's getting better every week. You know, another one definitely to have on my radar still, Tony. Ride Tony while he's playing well. I'm not saying he wins, but you'll get a run for your money, I think, and I think he'll be a good trader. Neiman, of interest, plays hard course as well. I didn't put his price down. Let's just see. Neiman is 42. Plays hard course as well as his win at Riviera proved. 13th again in shots gained off the tee, so he's right up there, but down the numbers in other categories. He's one I'd like to see if he starts well. You'd probably jump on because he tends to stay around. So he's definitely one on the radar. Neiman at 42. Let's see how he gets going. And then a player I've talked about a few times, Victor Hovland, and I've kind of dismissed him for his chipping. The one thing with, I love the one, you know, a lot of this is repeating myself. I love the way this guy plays golf, and he does play hard course as well, but he chips like Suggsy. And if there's a course he can get away with doing that, it's going to be this week, because a lot of these aren't going to be finesse chips around the green. You will just be missing the green in deep rough, and you've basically got to chop at it, and that will negate a little element of the skill that some of the others have around him chipping. He is a great player, very confident. He's talking his game up, so I just want to see how he gets going here. I think at 42, you know, he's good off the tee, good iron player. I'm intrigued to see how he goes here, because I do think that his chipping is terrible, but I just think this negates it and gives him a bit of a chance. And then you've got the Max Homer at 50. Another one on my radar. I think he'll go well. He's just a really good player now, just vastly improved, on form. You know, and there's, you know, in golf, if they're on form, back them. He's not outstanding in any category, but not disastrous. And I just think he's one you'll get a run for your money. He is becoming a sort of dogged top 20. So definitely one to see how we get going. So for me, at that bunch, all about the top 10, Ryan, Cantlay, Cantlay and Spieth appeal, just seeing how they start. Ram and Thomas are probably, I'd rather have those over Rory personally. Top 10 in the betting. And Fitz and Spieth, you know, are the two. You know, Fitz, throw him in there, look, potential traders. I just think you'll see their price short, and if they get it going, Fitz, because of that US amateur win and the fact he has been playing well. And Spieth, just because he's Spieth. So, and then outside of the top 10 on the radar, Willie Z, again, just see how he plays. I think he'll be up there, but the putter, Neiman, if he starts well, Homer, just playing solid, and Hovland, we'll see how he goes with the chipping. Lowry may be of interest, but I'm a bit hesitant. I just think he is on a downward turn. And then further down, the bigger prices, I think Tommy Fleetwood looks decent. 90 looks big. he's trending back to form, so certainly one to get on the radar and see. Corey Connors, again, played well, and you know, the pressure of playing in Canada in your own Open last week, but he's just a really good player. And at 75, you know, I'd rather have Corey Connors at 75 than Cameron Young at 50. And Horschel, you know, one Memorial's not an easy golf course. One at Memorial 2 weeks ago comfortably. You know, he's 70 this week on the exchange. You know, he's just becoming a really good, reliable player despite his silly West Ham bag. Players I couldn't touch Cam Young. I mean, we saw him self-destruct a couple of weeks ago. I think he needs to, he's one I've noted down. I want to see more experience from him. I couldn't touch Brooks Koepka at all. I couldn't touch Hideki at all, and I couldn't touch Dustin with your money, personally. I mean, I'd look at Dustin at 55 and Horschel at 70, Corey Connor at 75. I just think not for me. So they're ones that I would put in the bin personally. Cue one of them winning. I think Abraham Answer at 130 looks too big. I think the course could suit him, Abraham Answer. So another one to sort of make a note next to. But the flyer of the week has to be over 200. That's the sort of threshold I've set. Patrick Rogers looked like he might get us excited in the first round last week. He had a putt to go 6 under. Missed it, and the wheels kind of just sort of wobble along from then. But this week it is going to Tom Hoge, who, in amongst a flurry of missed cuts, was ninth in the PGA. He's won at Pebble Beach, a US Open course, top 40 in the Masters and Sawgrass. His game is a little bit off the boil, but I'm heartened by that ninth at the end of last month in the PGA. He is in the top 10 at scrambling. He has had some good finishes, and at 330 on the exchange, I cannot resist it. So Hoge is the flyer of the week. As always, I will update on Friday any other trades and bets in the Telegram group. Those of you who masturbate over the Masters in April, tune in this week and watch some proper golf. So thank you for that. Thank you all for listening. I hope it makes it all worthwhile. And I will be back with you for the bets on Friday.